This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees at 7:33. Land in West Virginia is prone to sliding. We see it throughout the state along many steep slopes, retaining walls, rock falls, and road slips and more. One geologist from West Virginia University says there's more we can do to help prevent these landslides. Glennis Board reports.
West Virginia has one of the greatest landslide risk of any in the country. And although there's not a lot of good data compared to floods and other natural hazards, we may in fact have the highest per capita landslide damage rate of any of the 50 states.
Steve Kite is the chair of the Department of Geology and Geography at West Virginia University. He says California might be the state that sees the most landslides, but again, per capita, West Virginians experience a lot of damaging effects from landslides. Steep slopes and prevalent shrink-swell soil components make for reliable land movement throughout the state's four seasons.
A lot of the damage or a lot of the cost of landslides are not so apparent because they're not so much in that landslides occur and we have to clean it up. A lot of the cost of landsliding is the prevention of landslides through things like retaining walls and structures that prevent fatalities and injuries and damage.
But more data is needed to get a better grasp on the land, so to speak. But
unfortunately, the U.S. Geological Survey has tens of thousands of stream gauges out there, but nothing comparable to that to detect and characterize landsliding. Mm-hmm. And almost none of the state geological surveys have an organized reporting system. It's not been a focus of any data gathering effort nationally.
But Kite says new technology is changing the way we see the world. Light imaging and detecting radar, or LIDAR, is breaking new ground. No pun intended. Thousands of laser beams per second scan the Earth from their position attached to fixed-wing planes or helicopters flying through the air and create a map of the landscapes beneath with truly impressive accuracy.
If the data are processed, you can take out the trees and the buildings, and you can see what the true ground surface looks like. And these are amazing tools at picking up landslides if you know how to identify them. It's actually better to try to find them on LIDAR than it is walking over the landscape.
You can't see the hillside for the trees, so to speak. Anyway, Kite showed me some images to illustrate his meaning.
You can see a lot of stuff in this area, down to foot trails and roads. Wow.
That's graduate student Marley Yates, who's looking at LIDAR images of an area of the New River Gorge. She's been able to identify over 200 individual landslides throughout the gorge. And the LIDAR also makes it pretty easy to determine what would cause the movement.
It seems as though a lot of these bigger landslides or landslide complexes are often related to human disturbances, particularly the coal mining in the gorge. It seems as though a lot of these landslide complexes are related directly to the mining in the area.
While LIDAR can also help us identify some of the more problematic areas in the state where landslides have happened, Kite says it takes a trained eye to know where undisturbed land might be prone to slipping. To that end, Kite says West Virginia would do well to consider creating a professional licensure requirement for geologists.
31 states have this, and many of them are landslide-prone states. Mm-hmm. If you go to a place like California or Colorado, before one can do a development, a geologist has to look at that property and sign off on the fact that it is stable enough to be built in.
Kite says civil engineers and trained geologists would make a bang-up, knock-down development team for projects in West Virginia, so to speak. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
This week, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration released updated regulations designed to drastically reduce the amount of coal dust miners inhale, hoping to cut back on the prevalence of black lung disease. Initial regulations were put into place in the late 1960s, which helped reduce the number of miners suffering from the disease. But Chris Hamby, winner of the 2014 Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting, says there has been a resurgence of black lung in the past two decades. That caused him and the Center for Public Integrity to take a deeper look at the issue affecting Appalachia. He sat down with Ashton Mara earlier this week.
So we're talking with Chris Hamby with the Center for Public Integrity and one of the most recent Pulitzer Prize winners for his series titled Breathless and Burdened, a year-long investigation into black lung disease in the coal mining industry. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why black lung? What drew you to this subject?
It started for me probably with Upper Big Branch. Not long thereafter, there were a number of reports, but one was from the governor's task force that he'd appointed. It's this massive report, but one page in there is sort of, as an aside, says there were autopsies of the 29 miners who were killed at Upper Big Branch, and of those, 24 had enough lung tissue to where they could do an autopsy of the lungs. And of those 24, 17 had signs of black lung, and that included guys who were really young and hadn't worked for very long in the industry, and this was a really shocking finding. And so this kind of caused us to look a little bit more deeply at it. It's one of those stories that you're hesitant to get involved with because it's so big and so difficult to understand and try and even figure out how you could say something meaningful about this vast universe. But was sort of drawn into it by the story of one man, Gary Fox, who was a miner who contracted a very severe form of black lung at a young age. And as it turned out, the lawyers in his case at a prominent firm that probably a lot of people in West Virginia know named Jackson Kelly had withheld key evidence that showed that he had the severe form of black lung. And he had to go back to work because of that. And he worked for a number of years getting progressively sicker until he couldn't work anymore. And he eventually died waiting on a lung transplant. So his story really drew me into this. And I started looking at whether what had happened to him was part of a larger trend. And it turns out that it was part of a larger pattern of what this law firm was doing. And in looking at that, which then led to looking at the involvement of doctors as well.
So what's the future of this story for you? Where do you go from here?
There are still some investigations that are underway and some things that have not necessarily broken through into public view yet, but I anticipate may at some point. And then I plan to follow all the individual cases. I mean, I've stayed in touch with a lot of the miners in these stories and a lot of the advocates in these stories. One man stands out, Steve Day, who was sort of featured in the second installment of the series because he basically lost his claim because of the doctors at Johns Hopkins. And he now has filed a new claim. The doctors at Johns Hopkins are not weighing in on his case because their program is suspended. He has now gotten an initial opinion from the Labor Department saying, if we were to rule on your case now, we would say, yes, you are entitled to benefits. And that's what the doctor who saw him recently said for the Labor Department. You have the most severe form of black lung. Now, he is about to go see a coal company doctor because that's what you have to do when you file. You have to submit to an exam by a doctor for the company. But I think that Steve has a great chance of winning his case, and I've been talking with him, and I know that he is hopeful for the first time in a number of years, and his family is too.
Is it ever over? Is there ever a day where you don't have to follow these kinds of people, where you don't have these stories to tell?
Well, I'd be out of a job, I suppose, but no. I think that there are a lot of stories like Steve's and Gary Fox and so many of the other miners that I talk to in this series. There's a lot of stuff like that, and I'm not talking about just coal miners. I'm talking about a lot of voiceless populations that they don't give campaign contributions. They don't really move the needle that much politically for people. People don't listen to them necessarily, but there's some, you know, pretty horrendous things happening. And you know, I think it's the job of a reporter a lot of times to try and figure out where this is happening and sort of force the public to look at stuff that makes them uncomfortable like this, and then maybe they'll do something about it.
Well, Chris Hamby with the Center for Public Integrity, thank you again for being with us, and congratulations on winning the 2014 Pulitzer Prize for Investigative Reporting.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
An extended version of this interview will be featured this weekend on West Virginia Public Radio's Inside Appalachia. You can listen to the full interview and also link to Hamby's reporting from our website, wvpublic.org. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:43. Rain with a chance of thunderstorms today. Temperatures in the 60s and low 70s. Partly sunny with a chance of rain on Saturday. Mostly sunny on Sunday. Temperatures through the weekend in the 60s and 70s with overnight lows in the 40s and 50s. Julian Lage performs For Critter on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week. One, two, three. Jazz guitarist Julian Lage with For Critter. You can hear this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Bohr, Dave Mistich, and Ashton Mara. Our theme music is by Matt Jackfert. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.